versus the volcano on April 25th, and Wells' Citizen Kane will be featured on April 29th. Tickets for Ebert's annual festival go on sale April 2nd. Most festival passes are already sold. That's our noon hour look at WILL News. Our next report this afternoon at 4:30 during All Things Considered.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to experience delicious specials, fair trade coffee, and your favorite treats at the Intermezzo Cafe. More information is available at KrannertCenter.com or 217-333-6280.
The unseasonably warm weather will continue across the region today. Meanwhile, a large upper-level low-pressure system located over the southern plains will spread rain into Iowa and Missouri today, while drier weather prevails east of the Mississippi. As that system slowly tracks to the east, chances for showers and thunderstorms will increase across Illinois from the west tonight and tomorrow. Highs this afternoon will range from the upper 60s in western Iowa to the mid-80s in Indiana. Low temperatures tonight will range from the upper 40s in western Missouri to the mid-60s in northeastern Illinois. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny and breezy. Expect a high of 85. The wind from the south at 15 to 25 with gusts to 25 to 35 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 62. The wind will be out of the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, there's a chance of morning showers and thunderstorms. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tomorrow afternoon. Not as warm tomorrow. Look for a high of 78 with the wind out of the south from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, showers are likely. There's a chance of thunderstorms. The low 57, the wind tomorrow night from the south at 5 to 10. Friday, cooler, showers are likely, and there is a chance of thunderstorms. Look for a high in the upper 60s. The wind from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday night and Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. The low Friday night will be in the low 50s. The high Saturday in the mid-60s. And the outlook Saturday night through Monday, partly cloudy with lows in the upper 40s and highs around 70. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 70s to the low 80s, narrow range. Lots of sunshine reported across the two states. At Rockford and Bloomington, 80 degrees. At O'Hare Airport, 82. In Mattoon and Carbondale, 78 degrees. South Bend checked in with 81. It was 83 at Lafayette. Indianapolis, 80 degrees. Terre Haute, 82. Willard Airport had 82 degrees at the top of the hour. The sky, sunny. The dew point, 54. The relative humidity, 37%. Pretty windy out there. The wind out of the south at 20 miles per hour, gusting to 28. The barometric pressure, 30.09. And at 1240, 81 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments today in a case involving the arrest of a Colorado man who was thrown in jail after telling Vice President Dick Cheney in 2006 that the Bush administration's policies in Iraq were, quote, disgusting. Environmental consultant Stephen Howards is suing the Secret Service agents who arrested him, contending that the arrest violated his First Amendment rights because it was nothing more than retaliation for the views he expressed to the vice president. More now from NPR legal correspondent Nina Totenberg.
What makes this case doubly fascinating is the fact that even the Secret Service agents involved in the arrest do not agree on what happened. The agents who actually saw the encounter testified they saw no threatening action. The agent who made the arrest accused the others of covering up, and some of his fellow agents have testified that the arresting agent asked them to change their reports to match his. Most of what happened that day is no longer in dispute. Stephen Howards had just dropped off his 8-year-old son at a piano lesson in Beaver Creek, Colorado, when he saw Vice President Cheney standing in the open shopping area near the ski lift shaking hands.
I walked up to him and I told him that I thought his policies in Iraq were disgusting. And I walked away. And then I left and picked up my child at piano camp.
About 10 minutes later, Howard's was back in the area, but had become separated from his son. The agent said they saw him looking anxious and didn't know at the time that he'd lost track of his son. Agent Virgil Reichel of the Denver office went over to Howard's and asked him if he would answer a few questions about his conversation with Cheney. Howard said no, that if the agent didn't want people accosting Cheney to talk to him, he should keep Cheney out of public places.
The Secret Service agent got furious. A few minutes later, I found myself with my hands handcuffed behind my back, and I was being charged with felony assault of the vice president.
Though Howard's initially told Agent Reichel that he had not touched the vice president, after reflecting on the encounter, he now concedes that he was wrong. He says he patted the vice president on the shoulder, meaning no harm. The Secret Service has since variously described Howard's as having patted Cheney with an open palm or hit him on the shoulder with an open palm, to which Howard's responds,
"If there was some threat to the vice president, I would have been head down the pavement when the interaction occurred, not arrested 10 minutes later."
In any event, Howard's was taken to the Eagle County Jail in handcuffs and held there until his wife bailed him out. A week later, the local DA dropped the charges, but Howard's wasn't dropping the matter.
The more I thought about it, the madder I got. My picture was in the paper. I was depicted as a criminal. My name was tarnished. And the issue is that this is retaliation for what I said to the vice president. It wasn't based upon any threat or any other impropriety.
So he sued the Secret Service agents, contending he was engaged in his constitutionally protected right to express himself to an elected official and that the arrest was retaliation. The Denver-based federal appeals court ruled that the agents had sufficient grounds for taking Howard's into custody, but the court also ruled that there was sufficient evidence to allow Howard's to continue with his claim of retaliation. Indeed, in depositions, the Secret Service agents directly contradicted each other, with arresting Agent Reichel contending that the other agents had given him a bum steer and were now covering their tracks, and other agents who'd actually witnessed the encounter with Cheney testifying that there had been no threatening behavior and that Reichel had asked them to change their reports to support his account of what happened. Nationwide, the courts are divided on whether law enforcement officers can be sued for retaliatory arrest when they arguably had grounds for arrest in the first place. In this case, the agents, backed by the Obama administration, are contending that in cases involving protection of the president and vice president in particular, law enforcement officers must make split-second decisions and that their protective actions would be chilled if they could be sued for making the wrong call. They want immunity from lawsuits. Howard's counters that the essence of the American democracy is the ability of its citizens to express their opinions to elected officials, and that if police officers cannot be held accountable for retaliatory arrests, the rights of citizens will be greatly inhibited. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
It's 12:45. America is dotted with countless restaurants, large and small. Many are well-loved for their distinct character and for what they can teach diners about cooking and about life. NPR's David Green takes us to one such establishment. Enoteca Maria is an Italian restaurant on New York's Staten Island.
After losing his mom and sister, Joe Scaravella was missing sitting down with family for home-cooked meals. And so he created something of an oxymoron, a place to go out for a home-cooked meal. He opened the restaurant and put an ad in the paper.
It said in Italian, it said, Cercasi casalinga per cucinare regional tipical, which basically means we're looking for housewives to cook regional food at our restaurant.
That's right. At Enoteca Maria, there's no head chef. Instead, the meals are cooked by a rotating group of genuine Italian grandmas, or nonas. When he brings a nona in for an interview, Scaravella doesn't even ask him to cook.
If I talk to them for 5 minutes, I know. If they can cook or they can't cook, I know.
How do you know?
I don't know. I just get a feeling, you know? And I'm usually right on. You know, I'll ask them some certain questions, like I'll ask them what food they grew up with, what food their mother made for them. And as soon as they start saying chicken parmesan, eggplant, as soon as they start saying that, I know that it's not the right fit.
One person who was the right fit is one of Joe's newer nonas, 58-year-old Giovanna Gambino.
Trish, what am I making tonight? Where's the menu?
She's a mother of three, grandmother of three, and on the day I met her, she was preparing some of her specialty dishes for the dinner crowd. This is a vat of something delicious. What is in here?
Okay. This is eggplant. Taste it. Eggplant, celery, green olives, some capers.
That's very good.
Do you think it was delicious?
I
you
think
tried
it was delicious.
You know what? I kind of do things with my heart, and everything comes out delicious. I got to be honest.
I gotta be honest as well, Gambino gave my taste buds quite a treat, especially with her own variation of a centuries-old Sicilian dish, arancini. Traditionally, arancini are these fried rice balls coated with breadcrumbs and stuffed with meat sauce, mozzarella cheese, and peas.
I did not make them the traditional way, which is with the meat sauce. What I did was I put a lot of kinds of cheeses, mozzarella, and some prosciutto. And then some ricotta as well.
So it's a cheese mix.
Yes.
Because usually it's meat, peas,
yes,
and a little bit
yes,
of cheese.
Yes,
to go
but
in
I try not to do the same thing, you know, constantly.
You know, she likes to try and mix it up. Well, Gambino learned how to cook when she was a little girl growing up in Palermo, Sicily. She was used to cooking for a big family. But cooking in a restaurant for strangers has felt different. And she kind of likes it.
Family knows. These are people I never met. So when they tell you, oh, I love your cooking and this and that, that makes me feel real good.
Enoteca Maria has been open for 5 years now, and Scaravella says he doesn't make a lot of money from the restaurant. He does it for the homey atmosphere that the Nonas create.
There's about 8 or 9 of them now. And you know, they're...
The family.
Well, I don't know how much of a family. You can't really put too many of them together, especially in the kitchen, because you see sparks are going to fly.
Does that happen?
Oh, yeah.
Well, despite that occasional tension, Scaravella says there's a lot of hugging and kissing that goes on at the restaurant, and usually it's between satisfied customers and the Nonas who cook their meals. Joe Scaravella says there's nothing like a meal cooked by a grandmother, and you can find a simple recipe for arancini that anyone can make. At least that's what Gambino says. That recipe's at NPR.org.
This fall, visit England and Wales, locations made famous in Last of the Summer Wine, Downton Abbey, and more, including Agatha Christie's home on the coast of South Devon. Does American history suit you? Well, travel in private vintage train cars on our Civil War train. This September's itinerary includes important southern battlefields and discussions with historian Anthony Pitch. Information is at will.illinois.edu/willtravel or call 217-333-7300.
And here's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 21st of March, 2012. It was on this day, 1963, the infamous federal penitentiary Alcatraz was closed in the middle of San Francisco Bay. It was simply too expensive. It was the most expensive of any state or federal prison. Now it's part of the National Park Service. Still many of its gardens are preserved, including 15 species of roses, and about 500 people visit it every day. It's the birthday of the poet Nizar Kabani, born in Damascus, Syria, 1923. Popular Arab poet, author of more than 20 books. His poetry influenced by the suicide of his older sister when he was 15. She killed herself rather than be forced into marriage with a man she did not love. He wrote romantic, sensual poems and poetry about the need for sexual equality and women's rights. Many years later, 1981, his second wife, an Iraqi woman, died during the Lebanese Civil War when the Iraqi embassy was bombed. He was grief-stricken, frustrated with the political climate of the Arab world, and he lived in Europe for the rest of his life. It was on this day, 1965, thousands of marchers led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. left Selma, Alabama, headed to Montgomery, the state capital, to protest the disenfranchisement of black voters. And it's the birthday of Johann Sebastian Bach in Eisenach, Germany, 1685, a church organist about whom a church council once complained, "You now accompany the hymns with surprising variations and irrelevant ornaments, which obliterate the melody and confuse the congregation." Here's a poem for today by Michael Ryan, entitled Garbage Truck. Once I had two strong young men hanging off my butt and a distinctive stink that announced when I was inching down your street at the regal, elephantine pace that let my men step down from me running to heave your garbage into my gut, then fling the clanging metal cans to tumble and rumble, crash and leap back to sort of where you'd lugged them to the curb before another oblivious night of sleep. Did you think life was tough? I reveled in it. All the stuff you threw out, used up, let rot, the pretty packaging, the scum, the snot, vomit and filth, everything you thought useless, dangerous, or repugnant, I ate it for breakfast. I hauled it out of sight. And what did I get? You were annoyed by my noise. You coughed at my exhaust. Your kids stopped playing in the street to pinch their noses and gag theatrically, with no clue how sick they'd be without me. I was the lowest of the low and untouchable. Yet I did